Hey, welcome back to another episode of Laser Graves. I'm your co-host, E.K. Wimmer.
Hello, I am Mariah Rose Wimmer.
And this is a podcast about 80s stuff, mainly 80s movies. So, and that's good, because we're talking about an 80s movie tonight.
Yeah, it's some 80s junk.
Yeah, there's definitely going to be some junk in this trunk that we're pulling out.
Oh, yeah.
Yep. It's going to be fun. We're talking tonight about The Junkman, 1982. First time watch for both of us.
Oh. But it won't be a last time watch.
No, we own it now, thanks to our friend Bill. Uh-huh. Bill's an old friend from when we lived in a different town, a different state, different life, and he was a really fun friend that I had for quite a while there. And we bonded over kind of cheesy stuff, like we'd play video games and stuff like that, but he has a great sense of humor. And when we started doing this podcast, he said, you know, I've got this tape I think you'd really like. Mm-hmm. And the name enough was good for me. And when we got it, we immediately watched it, and it did not disappoint. So
no.
Really, Bill, this one's for you. This is dedicated to you, buddy.
Thanks. Thanks for all the junk, Bill.
Thanks for this gem. okay, well, before we get started, let's do... thrift store finds of the week. You got mm-hmm. anything?
I do.
What do you got?
Today. Well, so we were in a thrift store and you texted me, which is like so 2000s.
Oh, it's like
to text from the other side of
the store.
It's like
the parent texting the child upstairs that dinner's ready.
Yeah,
that's
for
yeah,
sure.
It's the equivalent.
You texted me to come to you. But while you... No, actually, you called me. You did called me.
Oh, yeah.
Which
I knew
is like
you,
an old man.
Well, you wouldn't respond as quickly to text.
Mm-hmm. Well, when I took your call, I was actually admiring... It was an enormous clock. Like the size of a poster you'd put on your wall in the 1980s. But it was on like heavily lacquered wood. And it was a unicorn running across rainbows. Like swirly rainbows. And it was amazing. And... if it weren't $20 and so ginormous, I 100% would have bought it.
Yeah, you showed it to me. It was like 24 by 30. It was huge.
Huge.
And the reason why this is even worth discussing, beyond the fact that it was really cool, uh-huh. was here's a fun fact for our listeners. We, over the years, have collected those weird 80s unicorns. Oh, they're in a pile over there. I'm deciding
what?
Where to put them next. We've been collecting those unicorn pictures that are lacquered onto wood.
Yeah, like really almost like wet lacquer.
Yeah, for a long time. To the point that we actually have a double of one of them, which I don't even know how that's possible. But so this clock was kind of where it all came together. This was the ultimate.
Yeah.
And we had to just pass it. We're trying to make better decisions in life, and it starts here.
Boring. Although I did post it on the Facebook group, the Weird Thrift Store Finds, and so I posted the photo, and somebody else who was at that exact Savers today posted their photo from a different angle of it. So, small world.
It was really cool. I'm sad that we passed on that.
Anyway, you called me because you had found a chiminea, and you know that I've been looking for one for ages.
Yeah, so. What's a chiminea, though? Because I don't think that most people know what that is.
Everybody knows what one is. Who doesn't?
Really?
I don't know. I feel like it's common.
Okay. Oh, you know what? Speaking of thrift store finds...
Mm-hmm.
We should post some of our stuff on our Instagram, on our story or something.
That's brilliant. Hashtag yeah. thrift store finds.
Hashtag Laser Graves thrift store finds.
Oh, for reals.
Well, that's cool. Yeah.
So I found a chiminea. Well, you found a chiminea. And then we team-toted it to the car, set it up.
Yeah, right, chiminea is native to the Southwest. It's like a small lizard. They're found primarily in the southern part.
Oh, shut your pie hole. It's a little, it's like a fire pit, but it's like made out of clay and it's got a like pipe top. But it's like 9 billion degrees in New Mexico, so there's no chance we're going to see if it is in working order for a couple months. But
chiminea sounds like a cryptid of some type.
Oh, like a chimera.
Okay, that's what I'm thinking.
Yeah.
Oh. What is a chimera?
Chimera. I think it's... I mean, I'm not... I think it's just like a combo, like a like a griffin or a phoenix or something.
I feel like you're making this up.
I don't know.
I'm willing to admit when I don't know.
I just said I don't know, you butt face. I think it's like two things, you know, put together. Okay. Where it's somebody invented a crazy animal. I'm going to invent one right now. It's going to be a cat dog, and I'm going to call it a ca-dog.
Oh, I'm going to invent one called a mule. Well, I had a couple finds.
Oh, you, Eric, what were your thrift store finds?
I have...
mule.
I sparked up a kinship with one of the thrift store owners, and I know him by first name. He made the fatal mistake of telling me his name and saying, just ask for me when you come in.
Oh, no, you're that creep.
Well, here's why. Thrift store employees are notorious for being lazy and being like, hey, do you know if you have another box of this in the back? They're always like, they look first off like deer in headlights. And then second, they just deflect by going, no, everything that's out on the floor is all we have. And I'm like, no, you literally have a warehouse in the back that you're processing.
So do you
stuff.
Anticipate that this person who's making a minimum wage will go, yeah, and just go like dive into one of the bins face first, digging through until they find you VHS?
No, but there's a couple that are always like, no, let me go check. And they do. But then there's plenty that are like, yeah. And so I have now met the owner of one of the thrift stores.
Mm-hmm.
And it's become this thing where I can walk up and say, hey, is so-and-so here? And then the employees are always like, oh, yeah, like I have some important meeting because I know him by name. And then I go to the back and he lets me walk into the back processing room where there's always like a bucket of new VHS. And it has yet to really come up with anything great. Mm-hmm. I was out, like, instantly thinking, I'm in, like, this is it. I've got the edge on everybody. The grandmas that are looking for Hallmark films. And I have yet to find anything great. However, this last week, he was like, well, I think you've seen everything, but here's another bucket. And I opened it up. And
he puts them in a bucket?
Well, like a box or like a plastic bin, like a moving bin.
Oh, okay.
And I did find two really cool ones that we could cover on here. One's called Body Fever. It's a horror film. Yeah, it looks really... It's got an excellent cover.
Is it starring Kylie Minogue?
No, I wish.
Okay.
But the cover has a girl trapped in a, like, syringe. It's really
funny.
Oh,
yeah, I've seen it. Yeah, I've seen that cover.
And then the other one, which is really cool, is called Crime Zone. And that actually has a young Cheryl Fenn in it. And so this...
Cheryl Lynn Fenn.
And it's kind of this futuristic, like, post-apocalyptic sci-fi horror kind of thing. And so I...
Yeah, you showed me that.
Yeah, we almost covered it, actually, for a... We
it was close.
Probably will. Anyway, I found those two finds in the back, which I thought was cool.
You know, quick side story. You telling this tale of going into the back of the store reminded me of when we did the strange, like, backstore dealings of Shees. Do you remember that?
Yeah, in the Denver? Shoe store?
So, Shees is, like, a brand of vegan cheese that's, like, on the black market kind
or
of thing.
Or was? I don't even know if it exists anymore.
It still does in England, does it? But okay. You
it was,
can't...
like, from Scotland or something.
Yeah, you can't get it in the U.S. So, we would get a special shipment that they kept in the back of a shoe store in downtown Denver.
It's like a mobster thing.
It was very weird.
But
anyway.
With, like, hippies. Yeah.
Yeah, it was all the Birkenstocks and then one, like, refrigerator with shoes.
Yeah, and you'd walk through one of those, like, bead...
Bee
door
curtains,
coverings,
yeah,
that would also have like a tie-dyed sheet.
And it always smelled of patchouli.
Yeah, and then in the back, in a little tiny mini fridge, she would have this box of Shees that we had special ordered from like Scotland in the back of her shoe store.
It was so good.
What a weird time that was.
It was weird because we accepted it.
Oh, for sure. We accepted it with open arms.
Just as we accepted Junkman. I segued.
Junkman is very much accepted into Lasergrave's family.
Junkman is the Shees of podcasting.
Let's get into it. Junkman 1982. It was...
Is that the most awkward segue of all time?
No, it was perfect.
Okay.
Good job.
It wasn't Sheezy?
Nope.
Okay.
So it stars... It's written by, stars, and is directed by a guy named H.P. Halicki? No.
Halicki? Halicki.
Halicki. Oh, I got to be more natural about it. Yeah, it's starring H.P. Halicki.
Yep.
Oh, wait, it's got a rhyme. Yo, my name's H.P.
Halicki. No.
Okay. I saw Teen Witch today. I saw a copy of Teen Witch, and I've got it in me now. I've got that Teen Witch rap in my brain.
Oh.
So, Hilicki wrote all this. His claim to fame is Gone in 60 Seconds, the original. And this plays a heavy role. Mm-hmm. This is kind of a meta version of that, where he
didn't they reference Gone in 60 Seconds in this
big
movie?
Time. Well, the central character, that was the film he made, and that's how he became famous in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But it's not him, but it is him. So
yes,
put your brain on that and fry it.
This is
who we're dealing with, and I didn't know. I've never seen the original Gone in 60 Seconds. Have you?
No,
that's not really my thing. But no. I'll tell you what, the Junkman's my thing. Because wow, the cover looked awesome on the back.
So it's, what is the cover?
Well, the cover is like this really cool epic poster of like everything happening, planes and cars and assassins, but then on the back it's got like sexy 80s babes on a car and planes and assassins and explosions, and
basically it, and we're done.
This is
thanks
full
for
throttle.
Listening
This is Monster Energy drink before it existed.
Oh my goodness, it is. It's movie format.
This is like X Games in cinema form.
Put on your top hat or tap out hat. We're gonna go.
Top hat. No. Your top hat version.
We
of a
should.
Tap out hat.
We should. No. We should market Monster Energy tap out top hats.
We shouldn't.
I see the blending of so many cultures that seems natural.
No. Okay. Hey, before we start, I have to tell you a couple fun facts about this movie.
Okay, share them.
One,
drop your knowledge.
He almost died several times.
Who's he? The main actor?
Yeah, the actor. H.B. Hilicki. He almost died several times. You want to say it now, don't you?
Nope.
What's the Scruff McGruff rap?
Scruff McGruff, Chicago, Illinois. No.
H.P. Hilicki. See, now you want to say it. We're going back to 82.
Okay.
Okay, so he almost died several times.
How did he almost die?
Well, the biggest one is later in the film when that plane flies at him, remember, in the car? Mm-hmm. It was supposed to miss him, and it actually clipped and cut the car, and somehow he did not get, like, decapitated or cut
in
half. Yeah.
That would have been a really awkward scene.
But it was several times. The other fun one, which you'll go, yeah, duh, is that this movie held the Guinness World Book of Records for the most vehicles / planes destroyed in a film for 20 years.
I believe it. I so believe it. Because I thought, so when it started, I thought, we'll have to recommend like a drinking game.
Oh, you'd be wasted instantly.
Seriously, after a few minutes, I was like, I will not recommend a drinking game because people will die. If you took even like a sip of your drink.
It would have to be like
per car accident.
Take a drink every 10 car accidents might be more reasonable.
I also thought maybe I'll recommend people hydrate and just take a drink of water.
Yeah.
But then also they will have too much water and have an electrolyte imbalance. So
yeah, they'll get bloated.
Don't do anything based upon car accidents.
Or you could take a drink every time somebody from a plane throws a grenade at you.
Oh, that's much more reasonable. I think you'll only have like
3 to 5
drinks. Okay, so let's dive in.
Oh,
so,
wow, we're still going on there.
Yep.
No, we've dove in.
No, we've divin.
We've divin in. We done divin.
I divined into the pool.
So, let's dive into this. I love the titles that come up. It's really fun because there's like these little toy vignettes for all of the cast and
very
crew.
Creative.
Yeah, it's like a little miniature form of, you know, like
it's
a model
like an
set.
I Spy almost.
Yeah, it's really cool. So I enjoyed that. And then we meet our main character, Hollis.
Yeah, Hollis. And there's like an intro scene that apparently is like supposed to be a flash forward where it's a man learning that Harlan Hollis is dead, but you totally forget this scene, and it is only when I looked at my notes that I was like, oh yeah, that was dumb. So it's supposed to be some like fast forward flashback situation, but really then we go into immediately a super duper long montage of a man and a woman at a junkyard and they're falling in love. They're like peekaboo around cars and like gigglygooks. And I don't know what gigglygooks means.
It's a music jam called The Great American Dream by Freddie Cannon.
Mm-hmm.
And wow, this goes on for a long time.
Yeah, so it's just them. It's their whole life story. So it's a husband and wife. They're like flirting and at a junkyard. Then apparently they decide to make a movie, and then they make a movie and become famous, and then more famous, and they get lots of nice cars. And then she is killed in a DUI. Wait, first they have baby, then she's killed in a DUI. Then Harlan Hollis is heartbroken. Then he pulls his life back together for his daughter and continues to make movies that are successful. And this is all in like 2 minutes.
I will also say that when the Great American Dream song is playing and it's doing the montage of their mm-hmm. life, it's really fun. But the music doesn't stop being like a groovy jam while it's being like wife murdered kind of thing.
No, it doesn't,
it
does
just
it?
Just keeps plowing through that. So it's like these really sad, tragic headlines while it's still like grooving along to the same old like Great American Dream song.
I think, you know, you just got to smile through your tears.
That's right.
Got to groove through your grief.
And then he's over her grave. So that's where we get to next. He's like standing over her grave. I think he actually, I lost count, but I think he dropped 1,000 individual roses over the top of her grave. It went on forever. He just kept dropping single-stemmed roses.
Yeah.
It just was like, is somebody right off camera just handing him them, like, from a giant bucket?
Yes, and I actually wrote, I don't even know what's happening here. Are they making a movie? Because at this point, I wasn't even sure if we were watching a life story or if this was part of a movie or what. I didn't get quite what we were watching. Like, I didn't know if this video montage was the movie he had made or if it was a flashback on his life. And then I said, are people stealing cars here? Because I didn't know what was.
Yeah, it's interesting. It opens up and so here's something that I noticed right away about our podcast is that we chose this out of nostalgia because we were both born in the 80s. But because we were born 80, 81, that our formative years as kids in the 80s are kind of mid to late 80s, mm-hmm. which means that we don't have memories of like, I love that movie from basically the early 80s. Mm-hmm. And every time we cover, which we don't often. Most of our movies are like 89, 88, yeah. 87.
Because we're really secretly 90s kids.
But this is 82. And I noticed that when this started up, how 70s this is. Like,
yeah.
There's a real transitional period of early 80s that still feel stuck in the 70s. The fashion,
mm-hmm.
the filmmaking style, like the dialogue.
Yeah.
And this film, even though it is an 82 film, if you would have just shown it to me, I would have definitely thought it was like a 78, 79 kind of
yeah,
film.
It's like 70s leakage.
Yeah, for sure.
Because it's also clearly a low-budge kind of situation. So they're just kind of relying on the past. They're not innovating in any way. So continuing on with the storyline, we enter into something's happening. There's a police car chase. There's a helicopter rescue. Is anything even being accomplished here? I don't know what's happening because, so there's a guy, Hollis, who is riding in a car. The police chase and corner him, and then a helicopter swoops down. He jumps onto it, and he's evaded the police. And the whole time you're going, what's happening?
It's so much action.
Yes.
There's so many car crashes.
Yes.
That this is the way So I established this within the first 5 minutes of the film. It was already so over the top with car crashes.
And this is after the whole montage of his life story.
Yes. So what I'm going to say is that it lives up to the record from Guinness World Book of Records of
and
most car crashes.
We're not even starting.
Because when it hits its stride, holy shit, it is rapid fire, like a machine gun of car crashes. They just keep going.
Yes.
But already,
I think they're still happening.
This is the only way I could kind of move past this mm-hmm. was this movie is the equivalent of like a Skinamax movie, you know, where they show like very little dialogue and then they're like, okay, back on to a sex scene. Let's do it.
Yep.
And then they're like, ugh, we got to show some more dialogue. Okay, back on to another sex scene.
Yeah.
It's that, but with car crashes.
The dialogue is just stringing together car
accidents. It's like a means to an end. Like, mm-hmm. let's just put some dialogue in until we can show another car crash.
Yeah.
Or maybe we can do like 10 car crashes for every one line of dialogue.
Yes.
It is nonstop.
So what
for like an hour and a half.
Yeah, and what we've seen here is... they are like, and that's a wrap. And you go, oh, they're filming. You hadn't seen a camera crew at any point, but apparently they're filming this. And it was like scenes of him in the car, whatever. So they've wrapped on this film, which I guess this was a secondary like shooting of one scene of car accidents. It doesn't matter. But they're wrapping on a film, which is to be released very soon, which made me laugh because we know an editor and we know that there's no chance that there's going to be a turnaround of like 3 days.
Yeah.
Before its big release. So I don't understand.
Also, you know, we were talking about the fashion earlier and how 70s this is, but also then I realized, well, it was very early 80s to have these like car chase movies and stuff. Mm-hmm. I've never talked to you about this because you're not an action person, but...
What?
Did you ever...
very action-y.
You're not Johnny Dump action. Oh, you miss Johnny Dump?
Nope.
I was going to bring him out at the beginning of this whole charade.
You forgot about Johnny Dump.
No, you forgot about Johnny...
I never...
Johnny Dump is like the never-ending story, and instead of memories, it's like if you don't talk about Johnny Dump, he slowly dies.
Aww.
Yeah. So Johnny Dump's weak right now.
I'm sorry.
But the junk man's bringing him back. I was just going to ask, did you ever watch Dukes of Hazzard or like Smokey and the Bandit or any of those?
I haven't even started to talk.
about Smokey and the Bandit.
Let me explain on things I haven't said. I've seen several episodes, but I never specifically went out to watch it. You know, it's one of those things that it came on, you know, on a Saturday afternoon when there was absolutely nothing else to watch, and I would happen upon part of an episode.
Yeah, I just realized that this kind of style of movie was trendy at this time.
Yeah, I agree.
This was like a hit. It was kind of like the equivalent in horror of like slashers.
Yeah.
Like, this was what was in for action.
Isn't
that
weird?
It was like this and ninjas. Like, ninja movies, like American ninja movies, and car chase movies.
What kind of people would be interested in watching this many car chases? It's fun in one movie, but why would this be a trend? I don't understand.
Well, think about this.
I will.
This is going to blow your mind. What if the father who grew up on these kind of car chase movies now has a child, and that child is growing up in an era of Fast and the Furious.
Oh, Tokyo Drifting.
And it is the perfect circle. The circle of life.
There are those car guys.
Definitely, and this is a car guy movie.
Speaking of car guys, I saw a guy driving in a white car that said Family Jewel on the license plate. I was like, just one jewel? Okay.
There are a lot of people roller skating in this movie. Did you notice that, too?
I didn't notice a single roller skater.
All the women are, like, just... going around set on roller skates. It's like you're at Sonic back in the 80s.
Okay. So after this car, like they wrap on the movie, there is a journalist who wants to meet with Hollis because he's apparently the most famous man in the land. And she's trying to schedule an interview. And she's told, like, after the James Dean Fest, which we'll get to.
Oh, yeah, we'll get to the James Dean Fest, which was crucial to the plot of this movie.
Yeah, so she's just trying to set up a meeting, gets a little tour of their set. And we learn Hollis's daughter is a teenage girl. The brother of his dead wife is, like, his... I don't know, assistant, or he works on the set. And then he's also got a bearded general manager who's kind of, like, strangely creepy and quiet. I mean, clearly he's an introvert, and we all are suspicious of introverts. So, there you go. And then we go to, speaking of suspicious, there's suspicious people. I mean, I just wrote them, suspicious people.
In the car garage?
They're calling Hollis the target, and I guess they're supposed to have a... publicized elimination of Hollis. So we learn there's a plot to kill
Hollis. Okay, hey, before we get there.
Oh, okay.
Right before that, there's a scene where Hollis uses a lighter. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty positive it's a beer can shaped lighter.
That's pretty cool.
It was really cool.
I mean, if you're going to smoke, why not why combine not your vices? Beer can?
Yeah. It's kind of like the equivalent of the gun lighter. Mm-hmm. I wish I had like a gun lighter and a beer can lighter.
Oh, yes.
Okay, so yeah, there's this Assassin's All-Star Squad that is getting together. It's kind of like an Avenging Force. Remember where they do... But in Avenging Force, they do the slideshow.
Yeah.
Where they have the, like, projector. This is our target.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, it's kind of like this. But what's hilarious about this one... Actually, it's just like Avenging Force. Because the assassins are the least assassin-looking assassins.
Whoa, yeah.
Except for the chick. She's really
like
cool.
There's, like, one cool babe.
Yeah.
But do you think, now that you've mentioned it, you could splice... images from both movies together and put it on play, how long do you think it would take the average person to realize that they were not watching one movie, that they were watching two?
I think it would happen pretty quick, just for this reason.
Why?
Because of the style. That, like, one is very early 80s.
No, I feel like
not.
I feel like if you put 5 minutes of one, 5 minutes of the other, people would be like,
"Oh well, yeah, actually, I take that back." It would just be fighting and punching and
then car driving.
Yeah, and car. It would actually be the like ultimate.
Yeah, let's do it. So then we go to a scene of Hollis giving his daughter a horse, and then he does some like good parenting. He's mm-hmm. like, "I'm spoiling you, but remember, you got to do good." Okay. Parenting complete, and that was the end of that.
The acting is like, what's his name? Is it Tommy Wiseau? What's a guy's name from The Room?
Oh, yes, Tommy Wiseau.
Isn't it just like mm-hmm. it? He's
yes.
like, you got to do good. It's yeah. His acting is hilarious. Like,
it's very, very comparable.
This is great. And also, the assassins roll out for their big hit to like a southern jam.
Uh-huh.
The score is really fun. And then let's move to the James Dean
yes,
Fest.
Yes, let's do.
Because this is, I don't know what purpose this has, but I'm so glad it's part of the
I
film.
I know. Why?
There's no need
so,
for it.
Okay, so let's lay the scene out here. I'm going to kind of spread it out real quick. There is a James Dean Festival, and I wrote here, will anything make sense? The answer is nope. There's also a blimp race. There are a bunch of French people.
Oh, I forgot about the blimp.
There's a blimp.
That plays a major role in this film, too.
But there is no point to this blimp. So there's a lot of French people who care about James Dean. There's like a music festival, and there's some car people. And they're all gathering to celebrate that mm-hmm. James Dean died. It's unclear. I guess the French care about James Dean. And there's also a random dude who I think is one of the assassins. He's sitting in a car. It's a scene of him slamming a baseball into a mitt, just like in the driver's
Oh, that is
seat.
The assassin. Yep.
Is it what? Okay.
It's yeah, that's one of the one with the beard, who's like the hipster assassin.
Yeah, yeah. That's right.
So also, there is a scene during this whole thing where it's like being covered, this festival. Mm-hmm. There's a random newscaster who's a total babe, like a uber 80s babe, and I was like, oh, she's interesting. I looked her up, and her name was Linda Day George, and she actually went on, like, nobody really went on to do anything, but she went on to do two big 80s, like, horror films. One was Pieces, and one was Mortuary.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I was like, those are, like, actual
credits.
Did
she have leading roles in those?
I don't know.
Or was she just a newscaster?
Oh, that would be cool. Either way, it was kind of, I was like, dang, that's really weird when you look up almost extras in a film mm-hmm. and find out that they've got on to do really cool stuff.
So basically, there is a lot of history about James Dean and a bunch of people getting ready to kill Hollis because they've decided the James Dean Fest is good for this. There's a sheriff who's driving a station wagon. Several sheriffs, we find, are driving station wagons. He's killed by an assassin. And then
Sheriff is?
They have so many sheriffs in this.
There's also this assassin trap that they set up where there are these planes zipping around.
Yes.
And I at first wrote model planes, ? Because I did not mm-hmm. think that there would be actual...
I think they were actual planes.
This ties yeah. into the Guinness World Book of Records of most planes crashed because the planes multiply like bunnies in this film.
I think there were only two.
No, I thought that too. I think there are more than two.
Okay.
I'm pretty confident.
Well, why don't you guys watch Junkman and send us a message about how many planes there are crashed?
Side note. So one of the podcasts I listen to regularly is called Neon Brainiacs. That's a little shout out, but they always have this little segment that where they do like a kill count at the beginning, and they go through all the different kind of kills prior to the movie they're going to cover.
Oh.
And I thought it would have been hilarious to do a crash count because it would have been bonkers.
It would have been like impossible.
Grenades, explosions off the cliff, helicopters, planes. There's that one point in this film later on where the car is driving over other cars.
Yes.
But it's not a monster truck.
No,
it's
and there's actually a few scenes of cars driving over cars.
There's a lot of stacking of cars for no reason, too.
We haven't even gotten into it yet because Hollis kisses somebody who's apparently his girlfriend. Was that weird to you? Like, he hooks up with a short-haired lady, and her name is Karen. They kiss, and that's basically the last we see or care about Karen throughout the rest of the movie, because I think the interview lady is the only lady you care about, and the daughter, after this point.
Or on his end?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and we also meet around this time the female assassin, who's the coolest one of the bunch.
Oh, she's super cool.
She's really cool.
Style
she's like
icon.
Super, yeah, and she's got like these hipster glasses on.
She looks so cool.
She looks really cool, and I thought to myself, there's no doubt in my mind that Quentin Tarantino loves this movie.
Yes.
Because it had Tarantino written all over it. Like, not only the assassins, but the car crashes, everything. Like, I would not be surprised to find out that this film had a role in forming some of his later films.
I agree. So after Hollis has kissed random girlfriend Karen, he cruises off in his vehicle, and this is kind of what starts it all. A bomb is dropped from a plane.
It's a grenade.
Yes,
it's when we find out that the planes are not only real, they have grenades.
Yeah, like, they're chucking them out by hand.
Like World War I style.
They drop it out near him, and then they circle back and have machine guns or something, and more grenades, and they're attacking him, and he's trying to outrun the plane, and then I wrote, are the police on it? Because there's just police coming from everywhere, but they're not successful.
Also, there is, like, classic early 80s car chase fiddle music playing.
Yes.
It's like hoedown music, like
it's
Dukes
so
of Hazzard
weird.
Style.
This is where we launch into, it's just like more cops, just so many different scenes of police peeling out. Then it's scenes of two super duper sexy, what are they, 911 responders, like on the phone. Talking, like, taking in calls from people.
Oh, yeah, they then have a pretty big role. Yeah, I also noticed that there were car crashes, more car crashes, and then to the point of one car actually, like, wraps around a tree or something. Like, they're basically getting creative with the car crashes.
And then there's so many super-duper sexy cops and sheriffs.
Oh, yeah, I posted one on my site when we were watching this. There's this one sheriff for no reason, or not a sheriff, like a dispatcher. She's sitting in her sheriff's car, and she's got her skirt, like, all the way up, revealing her sexy legs. I'm like, what is even going on? Also, so I keep liking this to the, like, kill counts of a slasher in the 80s.
Mm-hmm.
You know how fans of, like, Friday the 13th, you can't just have somebody go up and stab somebody. It's like when Jason or Michael, you know, anybody, like, when they do a creative kill. But, like, say Jason puts, his victim in a sleeping bag and then smashes her against the tree. Everybody's like, oh, now that's a kill. That was really cool. Or, like, the spear through the lovers while they're in bed. Mm-hmm. This is the equivalent, but for cars.
Yeah.
It's like, you could have a car crash, or you could have a cool car smash into another car, wrap around that car, blow up, a grenade falls down that car, and then everybody's like, now that's a car crash.
Yes, and that is, right after something like that, a sequence of that nature, that's when we meet the pig. There's a guy who gets in a car accident with his pig, and it gets so much better. He's, like, talking to his pig strangely, and then he gets her out of the back seat, but the back seat's a waterbed?
I don't even know.
What even was that about? And this whole time there's French people too.
Yeah, there's a lot of French people.
Okay. So man with a pig, there's also the newswoman is there, the one from, you know, when they were filming that's supposed to have a meeting with him.
Yeah.
She's driving through a cow field and I kind of was like, can we just like take a break and look at the cows?
So just so we can bring it back for our listeners, if they're as confused as we are,
mm-hmm.
this all centers around a movie star who is mm-hmm. trying to be killed by assassins at a James Dean festival.
Well, he's not trying to. Assassins are trying to kill him for some unknown reason at a James Dean festival.
Yeah, that's what I said. Trying to be killed by assassins.
He's not trying to be killed.
They're trying to kill him.
Yes.
But semantics. But you know what I mean. Like, it's...
I don't.
It's, bunghole. That's what this whole premise is.
Yeah, so he's running, like, in his car. He's trying to drive away from assassins who are coming at him in cars and planes. They have grenades and guns. There are a million police officers, and then randos getting in the way, as well as a newscaster and a guy with a pig on a waterbed in the backseat of his
car. And to bring
car.
It back to the whole Skinamax analogy, it's the equivalent of saying, let's have, like, a dentist fix a filling, but every 3 seconds, let's stop and have, like, a makeout scene.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody cares about a James Dean festival,
nope.
about assassins, or everybody just... It's just car crashes. It's just...
So
the
many.
The only point of this movie is to blow shit up.
Yes.
And they, like, live on the edge of blowing shit up.
Although...
It's awesome.
When you reach, like, I don't know, warp speed of car accidents, this is when you start to focus in on the details. And this is when you and I noticed the sunglasses. There's a bunch of sunglasses on the dashboard of Hollis's yeah. car, which remain perfectly in place. Even though there are, like, grenades being thrown, he's, flying off of cliffs on the road, not on the road, doesn't matter. Sunglasses are all lined up on the dash.
Another little odd thing I recognized was there was a lot of focus on filming people's feet walking around.
Oh.
A lot of shots of just feet walking.
Maybe it was a fetish or an artist, I'm not sure, or a combo.
I don't know. This film is... clearly the most amazing car film ever made, though.
And then a couple of times throughout, there are people just slowly cruising by on a horse and buggy situation.
Yes.
For no
While
reason.
Things are blowing up everywhere. There are planes, there's grenades. It is pure chaos. Also, here's another fun fact for you. He convinced the local fire department to work for free, putting out all of his fires. Because he said this would be great practice.
It probably
so
was.
So the fire department in the film that is actually putting out all those fires are real firefighters.
They're just dudes
while
forced
he's
to work.
Blowing the whole land side up. It's like all of like California.
You know, it was like their best day ever and they still talk to their grandkids about it.
So amazing to be on that set.
And then, okay, so the car chase goes through the James Dean Fest and there's like James Dean people who are... like, running out of the way, cars launch through the stage, horse and buggy. And then this is when I realized there are two planes, at least.
Oh, yeah.
And then I wrote, now there's a bunch of French people crashing their cars. They're all wearing berets. That's how we know they're French. You know, zut alors.
Oh, and they have a French side, like a French flag painted on the side of their trailer and stuff,
oh,
too.
Oh, yes. Okay. I just can't even fathom any French person doing anything that happens here. I feel like France would just
They'd
choose
be above all
to
this.
To hate America for this
for this festival. Also, can I ask you a question that I could not put together even when the credits rolled at the end? Why are they so determined to kill him? Like, what's the incentive?
Well, we learn later. They've been, like, hired to assassinate
No,
him.
I know that. But, like, does he actually need to be out of the picture?
He needs to be killed because he is the head of the brand, and whoever controls the kingdom controls the cash. So, once he's out of the way, the only person who will gain from it is his daughter, the manager, and his former brother-in-law. Those are the three people who serve to gain.
Yeah, but why? How would they gain if their star's dead?
Well, they...
That's like saying we own the rights to Jean-Claude Van Damme's movies. Let's kill Jean-Claude Van Damme.
I think they just want the production company, maybe. And just, I mean, like, if this is the quality of movies, maybe they're like, I just want to make an art house film. Let's take all this cash and make something, you know, with feet. People walking.
All right. Well, we get another assassin, not the hipster chick, but we get this like pseudo hipster with a beard.
He's
and
got
a Hawaiian
shirt. A Hawaiian shirt. Yeah. It's cool because it's like if you found out your uncle Bob was an assassin and you're like, whoa, the Grill King is an assassin too. Who knew? That's kind of the scenario that's happening here. At some point Hollis is bleeding. An assassin drives off a cliff. Somehow Hollis gets a plane to crash itself.
Also, during this whole scene, when that assassin, by the way, the guy with the beard and the Hawaiian shirt, lasts no time at all. He dies, like, right away. And there's a song playing that I think's called Show 'Em How to Shake It, Sally.
Yeah.
I don't know what's going on.
Okay, so can I just, like... We gotta move through this.
Okay.
So
can we do like a two-part series of The Junk Man, please?
Let me read you through my notes. So many more car accidents. Man rides by on a horse and tips his hat to the accidents. More accidents, more cops. More accidents, more cops.
There's a Mexican car crash at some point, remember?
Yep. Now cops look at a map. There's still a plane. There are guys with guns. Plane drops a grenade into a car. And then Hollis throws the grenade at a car that's chasing him. So a plane drops a grenade into his car. He grabs it and he throws it at an assassin. Then Hollis launches his car over a plane. Then Hollis and his car and a propane tank on the front of his car crash into a house. And that's when the plane throws another grenade. The plane does a little loop-de-loop.
Oh, I read that house, by the way, he loaded it with dynamite.
Uh-huh.
And
I believe
just blew it up.
And then the assassin woman is looking on, and she looks guilty as the horse goes by. And then there are some more car accidents. Then everybody thinks that Hollis is dead. The newscaster does. It appears he's dead because he drove his car with a propane tank in it. And a grenade was thrown on him. Everybody thinks he's dead.
Yeah, I have a quote for you real quick.
Okay.
This is after a guy on a horse passes a bunch of Mexicans arguing in their lowriders over a car crash. Do you remember this scene?
Mm-hmm.
Very 80s.
What are they doing with other countries? They're like, Mexico, we're going to make fun of you. France, we're going to make fun of you.
So there's this like Mexican car parade with lowriders.
This in conjunction with the James Dean Fest?
It's in the middle of nowhere. And a guy on a horse.
Wait, before you continue, I love the idea of like a strange Mexican car parade in the middle of absolutely nowhere.
Just driving around.
Yeah, a James Dean
fest
in the middle of
nowhere. Well, they're all crashed and they're all arguing. And then a guy, an old man on a horse, just walks by. And this is my quote, and it's from you.
Oh.
You said, I have never seen anything like this.
It's true. Utterly unique.
This film's fantastic.
Okay, so everybody thinks Hollis is dead. The police tell his daughter, they're like, oh, for sure, we haven't, you know, recovered his body or anything, but let's go tell his 16-year-old daughter with the new horse.
Oh, and also the plane that blew him up, or thought they blew him up, they celebrate by doing a couple barrel rolls after they're done. They're like, we did it!
Success!
I like that idea of celebrating in a plane.
Yes. So the police are telling his daughter, and it's nighttime. But then it goes back to the newscaster and it's the afternoon. She's sitting outside. Hollis runs up and he's alive, apparently. And Hollis asks to be taken to the premiere of his movie.
Yeah. Also for longtime listeners of Laser Graves, you'll appreciate this. For first time listeners, this will be lost on you.
Mm-hmm.
you stayed awake this entire film, which I could not believe.
You did.
You were so invested in the junk man.
I was.
It made me really happy. Which, I'm going to just throw it out there that Avenging Force, you were also thoroughly invested. I think for all of your showboating of not liking action movies, I think you really like action movies. Well, you're always like, nah, no, no, no.
Well, it's because you only want to watch, like, Jean-Claude Van Damme's and...
No, I don't. I am looking right past over your shoulder at the VHS wall at American Ninja Part 2.
Oh, darn.
And it's staring back
okay.
at you. Okay. It's waving its flag.
So Hollis has asked to be taken to the premiere of his movie. There's also, at this point, another French caravan that goes by.
That crashes?
And the French play no role in this movie. They're beyond this. I don't understand.
Cars and planes blowing up. The point of this movie.
And then Hollis's daughter is crying with her horse. And Hollis doesn't want to, like, go check in with his daughter. He hangs with a newscaster who's, I guess her name is Susan. And they sleuth out the fact that somebody in his production company wants him dead.
He's going to make it to his premiere, right?
Yeah.
And has he already hijacked the blimp?
He steals a news vehicle, sees his daughter. He at this point goes in to see his daughter and he asks her for cash and she gives him a piggy bank in the driveway.
Oh, right. And then he exchanges the piggy bank for his friend who gives him a car, a gun, and cash.
Mm-hmm.
And then he makes it to his friend who pilots the Goodyear blimp, and the blimp flies him to his film premiere.
Well, also there's a guy playing non-stop harmonica while his former brother-in-law talks to the news lady. This was important because of the non-stop harmonica in the background.
There, you know what? His name is Hoyt.
Yes.
What is his name? He did the music, I think.
Yes, he did.
That's like a little cameo of the musician, and he has got a cowboy hat, bell bottoms, and an extreme... let me underline and bold extreme male camel toe.
Oh,
while he's playing the harmonica.
It's unfortunate.
I could not stop looking at it.
Depending on your flavor.
I was just staring at it nonstop while he was jamming on that harmonica.
It pulls the jeans in and it pulls your gaze.
It's eating everything in sight. It's like Attack of the Killer Camel Toe.
Camel Toe Black Hole.
Yeah.
So harmonica playing nonstop, camel toe. Hollis pays a taxi fare with piggy bank money and then borrows a car and then he borrows money from an actor in one of his films. Like, he's just apparently borrowing money from everybody. And then this is when we learn also that the film premiere isn't for 2 more days. So I don't know what the rush was.
That's 2 days of car crashes we can cram in.
So the newscaster interview, FBI is trying to interview the new president of the company. So he dies. They haven't even recovered a body. They're announcing it on the news. There is a new newscaster or new, not newscaster, a new president of the company being interviewed. And there's a bunch of lawyers around. And I think they're trying to suss out some information. It's unclear. And then I wrote, stuff, maybe a bomb. and then a car with somebody named Richard blows up. He's okay. More newscasting. An old lady buys a new car because it's like a random scene of an old lady buying a car. She makes the cross on herself. It doesn't even make sense at this point. It's all just bananas. Basically, we're killing time until something? I don't even know.
Well, he makes it to his film premiere. He jumps out of the blimp. Brother-in-law, there's a showdown because we find out that the brother-in-law was the one behind the whole assassination.
Not the manager.
Right. And he dies very quickly. It's so anticlimactic. He just falls off a roof and is dead. And then there's this like post-party scene right after. And that's it. The credits roll. And that's like, the film had no It's like crash, crash, crash. Oh, we should probably wrap this up. He jumps out of the blimp, goes to his premiere, kills his brother-in-law, and it happens rapid fire.
Yes.
And I remember just, like, after it was done, confused. I was like, how did we achieve that ending so quickly after all this buildup?
It was very boring. And also, in my notes, I'm pointing here. Here's my notes. Here, the paper. Right here. This is page one. This is where I wrote, it's the brother-in-law.
Oh, yeah.
Because on page one, I knew of my notes. And this is five pages of notes saying car crash, car crash, car crash. So,
you know what? The end credits were so freaking cool with the girls like walking around the cars and posing, the models like posing. This perhaps, I'm going to put it in there. We'll have to see like many episodes from now. This may take the cake for the coolest both beginning and end credits in a movie.
Mm-hmm.
Because the beginning credits were also memorable. I don't know if I have ever in 30 episodes, 40, whatever we're at right now, ever written down a note for both the beginning and end credits.
Mm-hmm.
These were phenomenal.
Well done.
Oh, wait. Monster Dog had really cool end credits, too. Yeah. And beginning credits, actually, now I'm thinking about it. Anyway, that's the Chunk Man. And wow. Was it explosive?
So all you need to know, here's the takeaway in a nutshell.
Is that Bill likes car crashes.
Oh.
Good job, Bill.
There are 1 billion car crashes.
Thanks for this movie. This was
so, it was a gem.
So much fun.
I'll definitely watch it again.
Definitely watching it again. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this was awesome.
And I feel like staying awake is a seal of approval, maybe?
I don't know. Not necessarily.
No, because sometimes I fall asleep during the movies.
This was so much fun. I would recommend it. I think it's a good... It's a good film to watch with a group, I would say. Like, I think if you're watching it with people, it's good. Especially once the explosions and car crashes really get going. It becomes hilarious. Like, I think I kind of had, like, tears in my eyes. I was laughing
so hard at one point.
It just would not stop. I couldn't catch my breath because it was just crash after crash. And the crashes, I'm telling you, are not car crashes. They're, like, the most over-the-top car crashes. It was so entertaining.
It was a treat.
Yes.
Definitely recommend it.
Absolutely. All right. Well, that's The Junk Man. If you liked it, you like what you hear.
Wait. Was he called The Junk Man just because he started out in a junkyard with his wife?
Okay. That's it.
Okay.
Oh, well, and because he had tight pants on the whole time.
No, that was the Hoyt.
Hoyt was definitely the Junk Man.
That's why they named it this, was just Hoyt.
Hoyt's cameo. So you can follow us on Instagram. We're at Laser Graves. You can rate, review, subscribe. We're on iTunes and Podbean and Spotify and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
We have our own sites on Instagram. I'm at death at 33 RPM.
At Mariah Rose Wimmer. I should mention, because it's been a while, Mariah is spelled like Maria. Talk to my parents about it.
But follow us and rate us. But more importantly, tell a friend, you know, if you think that they'd be into what we're talking about. Because it's fun for us, and hopefully it's fun for you. But we'll be back next week with some more 80s nonsense. And for now, we're just going to ride high and fly on our plane throwing grenades into the sunset on this episode.
Let's do it.
Bye.
Bye.